interruption, but I'm Mike Wilbon. Tony, more than 30 people in Stephenville, Texas, say they saw a UFO. You believe him?
Tony Kornheiser, believe him? Who do you think was up there getting probes?
I'm going to presume...
Do you know how many times I've gone through alien probes in my life?
Well, how'd you get back here so quickly?
Teleportation.
You're listening to Banal of America Audio.
This is why we play the game.
To sort of jump into the next big, talking point, if you will, in the calendar year of 07, as far as UFO stories that broke through, and that's Kucinich. I may have got the chronology of these two wrong, but I'll start with the Kucinich story. And just that the story came out, I think Shirley MacLaine wrote a book or something that said she was friends with Kucinich, and he saw a UFO, and all of a sudden it became quite a big story, and they even asked him about it during the presidential debate, and many people in the more exopolitical realm of ufology who really want this UFO story to be treated as a national issue and want it to be discussed were, you know, wetting themselves with excitement when the three letters UFO were used during a presidential debate. Mm-hmm. It became a huge story in and of itself, kind of really. Kucinich wasn't taken very seriously as a candidate in the first place, and this was kind of the death knell for him as a candidate because he became pinned with that UFO tag for, I would probably say, for the rest of his political career. I don't think he'll ever get over the UFO tag. And so we kind of learned a lot about the way politics and the media really feel about the UFO phenomenon as far as treating it as a national issue. I guess just talk about that. I mean, we don't have to actually talk about Kucinich seeing a UFO because, you know, much like the Simon King thing, that's irregardless. The real thing that I thought was interesting was the way it was looked at by the media.
You know what? As you were saying that, I was thinking, you know what? I wonder who inserted that question and decided to bring that up and put that into the debate.
Yeah.
A Republican or another candidate, perhaps? Well, the reason, you know, they don't take it seriously because nobody knows what it is. And if you don't know what something is, you got to put it in the I don't know box. And the I don't know box doesn't fit real well in politics.
Yeah.
You know, or I'm not sure. The other thing is, I think there's a lot more important things going on than where do UFOs come from and who's seen them.
Yeah.
And everybody realizes that. Whatever you think about the political process in this country or, you know, if it's been compromised or whatever. UFOs are like down the list, you know, in a list of 500, it's down at, you know, 499 or 500.
Yeah, it's like boxes or briefs.
Yeah.
I kind of interpreted this in some ways as really bad, a bad situation in a way for the exopolitical movement or, you know, the UFO disclosure, getting it into the political aspect thing because, you know, they've been really pushing for discussion of the UFO subject by presidential candidates and political candidates. And when they finally got it, they really got a slap in the face, kind of, if you will, as far as, like, how it was going to be treated.
Well, right, exactly. I don't know what their exact plan is, but unless you have somebody that has a really, really strong profile, you know, kind of a bulletproof political career and is a strong leader and speaks well and popularly on all other subjects, I don't think you can assert UFOs in the debate until after the person's in office. I think that's when they should be bothering the person. Make sure, quietly ask them if they're interested in the UFO subject, if they have any experience with it, and then that personal interest has to carry them into political office, not as part of a campaign, but as part of something that they want to take care of when they get elected.
Yeah.
I don't know how to do that, but it would seem that that's the way to get somebody interested in it, because by and large, the press, who determine what's important, don't care about the UFO thing if it's mixed with politics. In fact, you know, like we've said, they really tend to downplay it and laugh at it. Getting over that hump is insurmountable. It's more like people that are already in office that are interested in it, like, you know, Jimmy Carter was and Reagan was. And I can't think of anybody since then, any president since then, who's really had the UFO thing as part of their anything that they're really interested in finding out about.
Yeah, so you're
the bottom of, you know, when Clinton got in office, he said he was going to get he wanted to get the Kennedy files released or wanted to see them, and as far as I know, he never saw them. They wouldn't even show them to him, the JFK file.
Yeah.
ones that are sealed till 2025 or whatever it is.
Yeah, something crazy like that. So you're saying it's more advantageous to sort of like let the UFO phenomenon kind of come to them instead of trying to force the issue onto the politicians.
Yeah, at least at this point, because, you know, until people think it's important, I don't think politicians are going to think it's important. It has to be a personal interest of theirs.
Yeah, it did kind of show the other side of the coin in a way, because like we were saying in the O'Hare story in January, it was treated pretty seriously, but then coming around to November with the Kucinich UFO story, then it was the other side of the coin where it was really, the giggle curtain was really in full effect. I guess the lasting effect I had from the whole Kucinich UFO story and how they kind of brought the issue to other candidates and stuff was once I saw how poorly it was treated by the media, then I was kind of like, oh, wait a minute now, this isn't going to be as easy as they've been saying it was, or, you know, this is going to take a lot longer than it seemed. So who knows, you know, but maybe, you know, maybe in the 2012 election, now we kind of got the UFO issue out there and, oh, wait, maybe we can get it further in 2012. Who knows?
Yeah, UFOs and the paranormal and things like that are going to be important to a lot of people when the UFOs and whatever it is decides it's supposed to be important.
Yeah, yeah, and when it has some kind of effect on people that beyond just a passing interest, do you know what I mean? More than a thought question, when it has some kind of effect where, you know...
Yeah, when everybody's affected in some way.
Yeah, when they're
lying. Which is why I said that that's... I think the phenomenon is going to decide when that happens, not us.
Yeah. And then the other big event, pretty much to close out the year, was the November disclosure press conferences, press conference, and sort of a media blitz, really, in November for disclosure, witnesses, government witnesses coming out, that kind of thing. It was sort of a rehash of the 2000, I think it was 2001, maybe, or 2000, I forget the year, but Stephen Greer wasn't involved with this one. It was from a different group. This sort of November disclosure push that happened all of a sudden. I guess just what was your take on that whole series of events? And let's start with that, just what your take was on all that.
Well, because of my opinion about exopolitics and all that, I didn't follow it that much because I didn't think it would make that much of a difference and not many people would care. The thing was that these people keep trying to get UFOs out into a public debate, which is great. And I wish it was more in the public debate. And like I said, it's an uphill battle, and that's not a battle I want to deal with. The only one I remember, I think there was one at the National Press Club that was hosted or moderated by Symington.
Yeah, that's the one I'm talking about.
Uh-huh.
And then it seemed like that turned into a little bit of a media blitz, but then...
Yeah, and then there was very soon after that, there was something on Larry King's show with a few different people, including Stan Friedman and
yep.
and a couple other people. Who was the astronaut that was on there that rambled on?
I want to say Buzz Aldrin.
Was it Aldrin or Cooper?
I believe it was Buzz Aldrin. I know he was on in July and was rambling and had a little model and stuff and was showing it off and just like kept trying to explain it, and Larry just kept trying to speed him up. So that might be what you're thinking of.
Yeah, well, I'm sorry I didn't pay more attention to it, and it made a little blip on my screen, and everybody I know, no blip at all.
Really?
Yeah, well, not UFO people, but just friends of mine, and you know, people I work with, and my flying buddies and stuff. Most of them didn't even hear about it.
Yeah, that was the thing. It was. It was really pumped up a lot, it seemed, in ufology, but in the end, as is the case with just about every story we've talked about here this year that went by, in the UFO scene, nothing had that staying power that we really sort of need, and nothing really latched on and had, you know, more of a role to it.
Yeah, but, you know, if like I said, it would have to be something where something very strange happened to a lot of people over a period of time. And that somebody was paying attention to in a large media outlet. That, or there could be a big book written about it or something. Because, you know, when Communion came out, that was like a bomb being dropped.
So you think like maybe like another flap type situation, like kind of like what happened in the 60s and 70s type of thing?
Yeah, maybe like a flap or a flap where people are, there's some sort of lasting effect, or somebody says they're going to be back on this day and it comes back on that day.
Yeah.
I don't think it's ever happened. It may have happened once or twice. The last time I think it happened was at Fatima in Portugal, but where the thing did come back when it said it would.
Yeah. That's pretty much like the big events of the year, and then we kind of talked about that. One of the big trends, I guess you could say, in the year that I sort of noticed that was really started coming around a lot at the beginning of this year was this kind of like explosion in paranormal TV. Seemed like there's been a lot more paranormal shows, and there's even more coming up on the horizon. Are you sensing that as well, that there is maybe with the writer's strike or something else, I'm not sure, but there seems to be a little bit more interest in the paranormal all of a sudden. It's kind of coming around again.
Well, not because of the writer's strike, because they need writers for these shows. But, I noticed that, but I also noticed that it was more like, it's more like ghost stuff.
Yeah.
There is that UFO Hunter show coming out with William Burns and a few other people, but that's the only one I really know about. But, yeah, most of them are like, you know, paranormal shows, like you said, like ghost hunter shows.
Yeah.
Haunting shows, things like that. They go through fads, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. I definitely think we just had a ghost hunter guy on last night, and pretty much we were just talking about how the ghost hunting thing is definitely a huge fad right now. And that kind of ties into sort of what I noticed as the trends in the esoteric world for 07, just based on the stuff that I had seen and having my ear to the ground. It seemed like the 9/11 thing starting to die down a little bit. Ghost hunting definitely picking up a lot. UFOs, even though they sort of broke into the mainstream, I still kind of felt like it was a little bit of a down year in a sense that it was more of the same. And I felt like cryptozoology is kind of a little bit on the rise. Might be seeing more of that, especially
with
the Monster Hunters show and a little bit more mainstream acceptance of cryptozoology. I guess just sort of react to those trends, if you will, if you think those are pretty accurate depiction of what's going on in the field.
Yeah, I think UFOs got a nice boost at the beginning of the year, like we said with the O'Hare thing, and kind of held steady through the year. I don't think there was a downturn in UFO interest, especially with the stuff coming out in the debates and politicking and things like that. The ghost hunting stuff, quite a bit up. I have no explanation for that except for that it's not been, people haven't paid as much attention. And of course, there's, psychic shows like John Edward and all that are always popular. They've been popular forever.
Yeah.
magazines, all that. And the cryptozoology thing, that kind of surprised me that it is getting so much play right now. And I think the reason that people are more interested in cryptozoology than in other paranormal type things is cryptozoology on its face isn't really a paranormal pursuit.
Yeah.
It's pursuit of animals that haven't been discovered yet or aren't accepted as being discovered yet.
Yeah.
And that can range anywhere from, that place in Sumatra or whatever they found, or that Garden of Eden place with 8,000 different new species nobody had ever seen before, which is quite exciting. That's a cryptozoology, as it turns from not known to known is kind of a cryptozoological phenomenon. And then there's the classic ones like, Bigfoot and Loch Ness Monster and Lake Monsters, and then, one-offs here and there. There's other things like, phantom kangaroos and black cats and all that. These are animals that are known about, and so they're easy to get a handle on. Yeah, there's black cats running around. There's panthers. What they're doing in the middle of England or, in a backyard in Ohio, we do not know, but people saw them. That's an interesting thing. It could have happened, I guess. It's coming from a place that's not so, out there as aliens or whatever, because you're never going to see an alien in a zoo.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
But you might see Bigfoot in a zoo. I have serious doubts as to whether anyone will ever capture a Bigfoot, because I don't think it's an actual physical being all the time. That's my opinion right now. But, yeah, I think people are interested in it, and people with a science background. I notice cryptozoology pops up a lot on Boing Boing.
Yeah, you were pointing that out on the on UFO Mystic, that UFOs aren't cool, but cryptozoology is, and that definitely seems to be the trend.
I wasn't jealous of the cryptozoology and Lauren Coleman, who, the guy's a giant in the world of anomalies. But what it was what I was pointing out was people that with a science background and the kind of people that look at that site, the cyberpunk kind of people that tend to think of themselves as, you know, hip and cool and all that on top of a lot of trends, this appeals to them because it sort of tweaks the nose of science, but not that much. Mm-hmm. When you talk about alien stuff like that, it basically is, you know, slapping science in the face. And that's not as comfortable for people. Although I did, you know what's funny, I did talk to or email with Mark Pilkington, and he said that he had dinner with one of the people that writes for Boing Boing, and he said he gave him a stack of UFO books.
Well, that's good.
Look for maybe some more UFO posts on board. And you know what? I have noticed them more recently. They had one about the Texas sightings that came up a couple of days ago. That was posted on Boing Boing.
Yeah, see, that's what we got to do.
I wouldn't have seen. I don't think it would have been on there last year.
Yeah, we need more of a grassroots thing going on because that's the kind of thing that'll help.
I think I personally should write to the guy and introduce myself and say, hey, take a look at the site. This isn't the ufology that you think of when you know, think of some pimply guy with a fat pimply guy with glasses living at his parents' place collecting clippings. You know, it's a little bit different than a lot of people think. If you take the time to take a look at it, and brings up philosophical questions and questions about the philosophy of science and how it might change to adapt to studying things like this.
Yeah. Well, we've kind of, you know, we've been talking about on the show with guys like you and Mac Tonys and stuff and Nick Redfern that the UFO field's changing and maybe it's time to re-educate the rest of the people as to what this field's really all about because it's not just. It's not, you know, it's not what they may have thought it was in the 80s and 90s and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the loudest segment of any subculture,
yeah,
tends to be the one that does the least thinking about, or you know, is the most entrenched. I don't know if they do the least thinking, and that's what is presented to the world. Like, you think that. You know, there's people, you know, people are going to get mad at me now, but there's people in PsyCop who are actual, real skeptics that want to get to the bottom of things. But the loudest ones are the ones that have a fundamentalist belief in in the agenda that they're trying to push.
Yeah.
And that's what people think of as that organization.
Yep. And it's the same way with the UFO.
Yeah, the loudest people in ufology, the people, I'm not saying loud like, you know, a bunch of boors standing around yelling.
Zealots.
The people that get the most airtime, the people that are good at it, the people that are good at the media thing, are the ones that are pushing the extraterrestrial thing.
Yeah.
And a lot of people in ufology are tired of the extraterrestrial hypothesis. They accept it as a possible explanation. I do. But it's a possible explanation and only one of quite a few. And most people aren't aware of the others because they're not amenable to sound bites.
Exactly.
You know, I wish I could put the, you know, Mac is going to be able to put the crypto-terrestrial thing into a few sound bites. He's going to have to when the book comes out and he starts getting interviewed. And at that point, that'll be a little turning point, I think. I've got a lot of big hopes for that book. I wish I'd written it. It's one of those things where you have got a few ideas, and you think, oh, this would be nice, and this is interesting. But Mac has actually taken those ideas, run with them, thought about them a lot more, done the research, and he's done a book, and I can't wait to see it.
Yeah, it should be interesting. I was really intrigued when we had him on the show to talk about it, and I'm looking forward to seeing what he has when he has it all together in one thing. It should be really cool.
Yeah.
Now, this is kind of outside of your realm, but one of the trends that I mentioned here that I thought I noticed this year was that the 9/11 thing really had kind of died down after it sort of peaked out last year. Did you get that impression at all? Probably maybe you didn't even know, don't even really follow that sort of news, but I don't know.
I sort of follow it, yeah.
Did you get that impression, or do you think that it's still going strong? Or it felt, to me personally, it felt like it was peaking, and then last year for the in 06 for like the big fifth year anniversary, then it's kind of gone downhill since then. With aside from this new weird trend of like public rowdiness of 9/11, you know, don't tase me, bro, people disrupting events. Seems like there's been a disrupting trend that's come up in the 9/11 thing. But overall, I felt like the buzz about it was definitely down in 2007. What do you think?
I agree with you. I also think that, you know what, it's going to get immediately immediate huge shot in the arm the next time there's a terrorist attack in the United States.
Yeah. So this is going to be like a whole field that it's not going anywhere as a field. I mean, it's like the new JFK thing in a lot of ways.
Yeah, it's gotten to the point where, you know, most people, I think, a lot of people accept that there's a big question mark there. At least there's some doubt, just like the JFK thing.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not the kind of person that's going to, you know, I have incredibly huge, you know, suspicions about any kind of power. I don't like centralization of it. I don't like cover-up of it. I don't like non-accountability of it. And that all plays into the 9/11 thing, which makes me have serious doubts about the official story. I don't have a deeply held belief in any direction. I just have serious doubts, maybe more than other people.
Yeah.
I think that's what the 9/11 truth movement did, was plant that seed of doubt in people's minds. And I think that's a good thing. Doubt is a great thing, you know. It's nice to nail somebody to the floor and say, look at what you did, and have it, incontrovertible evidence. But that doesn't happen very often. But, having the doubt there is a good thing. I mean, that's part of why we still live in this country and have elections and all that, and, you know, hopefully have some democracy still going on.
Yeah.
You know, if it's got to be expressed as doubt about something as horrible as 9/11, then that's good. I mean, that's a good thing. So I'm glad those people are around. I'm glad they did what they did and are doing what they're doing.
Yeah, it's a fascinating sort of like field to watch, because it's very rare that you get to see like the birth of a movement in a way, or sort of like the birth of a whole new realm of the paranormal world, because conspiracy is kind of in the paranormal world. So it's kind of interesting to watch this thing as it grows and changes over the next, you know, 5-10 years, and where it's going to go next. And
yeah, why it's called parapolitics by a lot of people,
yeah,
in that movement has been for a few years. Ken Thomas and Rob Sterling, people like that, other friends of mine, they've pushed for the term parapolitics rather than conspiracy because of the bad connotations of the word conspiracy theory.
Absolutely, yeah, yeah. Like the people who don't want to say UFO anymore and change it to something else.
I don't have any problem with the UFO. You know what? It's funny. I've got all kinds of problems with people trying to change language around to make them either feel better or to soften the blow of something. But then I don't have any problem when something becomes a little bit more descriptive. Like instead of saying skeptics or debunkers, I say fundamentalist skeptics, because that to me is, because a skeptic is fine. I don't mind a skeptic. What I don't like is somebody who has their mind made up, which is a fundamentalist mindset, which is why I say fundamentalist skeptic. You'll notice that on UFO Mystic. Every time I'm talking about skeptics, I say skeptics. Every time I'm talking about somebody that's had their mind made up and won't have it changed and doesn't look at the evidence, that's a fundamentalist skeptic.
Yeah, exactly. And I guess just to wrap up the 2007 year in review, would you say good year or bad year for ufology? Like we said, we kind of broke into the mainstream a little bit more here in 2007 and held steady, as you pointed out. So would you say good year or bad year, or it's going to take a while before we really look back and know?
You know what? Holding steady is always good, especially the UFO thing, because that goes up and down and up and down. Holding steady is, you know, good for a financial report even, you know, and especially good for ufology, yeah.
Yeah, and good in the sense that that it held steady at the point where it broke through in January, you know what I mean, where it got some mainstream play, and then over the course of the year, a good UFO story or a big UFO story would get more mainstream play. So it held steady at the point where at least they talked about it, which is a change for the better. So, yeah, I guess it would be a good year for UFO.
Yeah, and the disclosure from France, and the release of files from France and from England coming up here. You know, that might be a tiny little push here at the beginning of this year.
Yeah, so we'll see what happens in 2008. Do you have any ideas what we may see, or it's always a mixed bag and you never know what's going to come up around the horizon?
I have no idea what's going to happen. I hope it continues to interest people. Like I said, if there's any kind of giant political thing, like another terrorist attack, ufology, everything else in the toilet for another 5 years again.
Yeah, exactly. So,
you know, because it's not going to be very important. It's much more important to find out if our own lives are going to be threatened. That's a lot more important than making you know, stupid talk about UFOs.
Yeah, yeah.
And UFOs aren't killing anybody. They don't have an agenda.
Yeah, so, you know, terrorist attack or if the war gets worse or spreads to another country or something
right, exactly.
like that.
You'll see UFOs go completely off the map for a while again.
Yeah.
It took it like 5 or 6 years to come back after 2001.
Yeah, I'd say 2007 might have been the comeback year for ufology as far as the mainstream goes post 9/11. Is that
yeah.
a fair estimate?
Yeah, I mean, if the interest that was on in ufology before, at least in the public mind, is probably back to at least where it was before that. Maybe a little bit more, but, you know, that's the benefit of hindsight. Who knows?
Yeah. All right, now I just got a couple other little points I want to talk to you about, and the one big thing I want to ask you about is sort of breaks the fourth wall in a way. This is your post on Long John Nebel from UFO Mystic, because I was completely fascinated by this piece. I'm a huge fan.
You were.
What's that? Well, you were kind enough to include me, actually, at the end, which I really appreciate.
With a link.
I know, with a link, with a hard link, which I really like. Then they can go right to my site, which I love. but I was really touched that you included me in there. I really appreciate that. And as a fan of UFO history and UFO media and UFO media history, it was just fascinating. I guess talk a little bit about who Long John Nebel was for people who don't know anything about him. We'll include a hard link to this article because it was fantastic. Talk a little bit about Long John Nebel and his role in shaping paranormal media.
Sure. As far as I know, I can't remember his actual real name. It was something, I think he had like a Jewish name, but he changed it to Long John because he was like 6'8" or something. He was this big, tall guy.
Yeah.
The story of Long John is really interesting, and it seems like he was destined to kind of be the person that had the first real actual all-night paranormal radio show ever that I know of, at least in the United States. Because he was born in Chicago, I think in 1917 or something like that. And he left home in the eighth grade to join the circus. He asked his father, he said, I filled in for a clown today and they let me, there was a clown that was sick and he wanted to be a clown in the circus. So they let him do it, at least according to his account. And he said after that, he said it's showbiz and kind of more appropriately, kind of the carnival man's patter, selling things. He was really into selling, so he became a salesman after traveling with the circus for a while, for about a year, I guess, when he was in eighth grade. He moved to New Jersey, I think, in the early 50s, and he started an auction house called Long John's Auctions. And then, he's up there selling stuff every day. It was just along the side of the highway in New Jersey. And the way he got into radio was that he used to buy radio time on New York stations for his auction house. And one of the radio people, one of the producers, I think it was from WOR radio station,
yep.
came out to one of his auctions one time and watched him up there selling stuff and said, God, this guy is a great personality. And he talked to him a little bit and found out he did have an interest in doing a radio show about weird people, basically, not really about the paranormal specifically, but just about the occult and even conspiracy, as it was called at that. I don't know what it was called at that time, conspiracy yeah. theories. They put him on the radio, and within a few months, it became the most popular show on the station because they put him in the crappy time slot from like 11 at night to 5 in the morning.
Yep,
and it soon became the highest rated show on the station. And in 1962, he was lured away by a $100,000 a year offer from a rival radio station off of WOR. And then he continued at that station for a while, and he ended his career in 1977. About 3 months before he died, he actually finally retired. Larry King took over his slot.
Yeah, and then Larry King slot eventually kind of melded. Larry King left, and then that just turned into Coast to Coast kind of for that time slot.
I guess so. I don't know when Coast to Coast first came on. I thought it was in the early 90s.
Yeah, my impression was that when Larry King left late night, then sort of after a brief period, I don't know if anyone really sort of filled the void as who was the late night king, if you will, of radio, but then Coast to Coast kind of slipped into the thing with Art Bell.
Yeah. But Neville had people, you know, these classic UFO stories and personalities and all that we only, you know, read about and hear about. If you can find recordings, I've got recordings of probably about, I don't know, 20 or 30 of his shows. And there's people on there like Gray Barker. Jim Moseley was on as a panelist. He'd have this group of people called a panel. And the show was actually called The Party Line because he'd have, like, you know, four or five people there and two or three people on the phone talking.
Yeah. Like you said, it wasn't necessarily like a paranormal bent, but it was open to those kind of ideas and stuff and had those kind of guests on, right?
Right. I mean, he'd have a fortune teller, whatever, a psychic on. And then the next night he'd have, you know, Orfeo Angelucci on. Or George Adamski or something like that. He had these people on multiple times, or Gray Barker, or, you know, Al Bender or something like that. All these classical figures from ufology, or, you know, somebody from the military talking about their viewpoint of the UFO subject. Or they'd have a ghost hunter on and they'd talk about ghosts for that night. Another one of the panelists that was on there for a long time, believe it or not, was James Randi.
Oh, wow.
When he was simply a magician and not the podium-pounding skeptic that we know from later. I mean, excuse me, podium-pounding fundamentalist skeptic that we know from later.
There you go. Now, what about this story here with Jackie Gleason? He was buddies with Long John Neville, and you hear a lot about Jackie Gleason and the Nixon UFO story, but I had never heard this other story that you shared in the article with regards to Neville's radio show.
Well, Gleason, as everybody knows, was heavily interested in the UFO subject. But the thing was, he was deathly serious about it, you know. I want the facts and that's it. I don't want any bullshit on you know about UFOs. So if anybody came on who he thought was and if he happened to be listening or in the studio, he'd give him crap about it. And I've got a recording of him you know, if Gray Barker was a woman, he would have been reduced to tears. I mean, I know Gray Barker was gay, but he keeps hammering at him because Barker had said something. He had half jokingly said, "Oh, you know, there's a saucer coming that's going to pick us up, and you know, Jackie and you, John, are invited to take off with us in the flying saucer." You know, and Gleason said, "How can you say something so, you know, stupid and you know." How can you take this so lightly and joke with us? And Barker was saying, you know, he says everything but look, it was a big joke, dude. Don't take it so goddamn seriously.
Yeah.
Because I was just playing with you in the midst of talking about a bunch of other stuff. And Gleason was saying, well, how can you come out and say something like that? Publish books and be a school teacher as you say you have been and run a business like you do. Barker's business was booking films to different drive-ins, I think. How can you do all this and be such a serious individual and then say something stupid like you're going to take us on a flying saucer? And, you know, Barker again, he was like, well, I was just, you know, I was just saying something silly. Maybe if it happened, that'd be great. I didn't think it was going to happen. Somebody thought they were going to take us on a ride in a flying saucer. You know, obviously it didn't happen. And, you know, Gleason just, he won't give up. It's like a bulldog holding on. It's like, you know, it was a joke. It was a half-serious joke. We didn't think it was going to happen. We thought it was funny to mention. Why are you taking this so seriously, Mr. Gleason?
He's like, yeah.
And he just won't let it go.
Weird.
It's really funny to hear, too. I mean, Gleason was probably there at home drinking a scotch and, you know, trying to tear Barker into asshole. But it looks, it's a poor reflection on Gleason and reinforces everything I always thought about Barker, which was he didn't really believe too much, but he had a lot of fun with the subject and deep down really wanted to find out what was going on, even though he thought he probably never would.
Yeah, that's a That sounds like the attitude of most of the people that I know in respect of the UFO field, too, actually.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, and that was just one aspect of that show, and I'm sure just one aspect of Gleason, because that's the only recording I have of him on the show that I'm aware of. I think Wendy Connors, who does that Faded Discs thing, has a bunch of different Long John Neville recording. There's one recording available, I think I put the link up, at archive.org.
Yeah.
Of George Van Tassel on Long John Neville's show. And so if you want to listen to exactly what he used to sound like, his opening theme, what the show was like, what the format was like, you can go there immediately to archive.org and just type in Long John Neville and you'll get it.
Nice. I'll dig up a link and have it posted.
Or you can go to my article because there's a link on that one too.
Okay, nice. Well, I'll have a link for that for sure. What about the only other part of the Long John Neville story I want to ask you about was this whole thing with Candy Jones, which is bizarre. Talk a little bit about the story of Candy Jones, her relationship with Long John Neville, and the strange CIA mind control element to that whole thing.
Yeah, I hope Adam Gorightly isn't listening to this because he probably knows far more about it than I do. Because I read the book like 10 years ago. I still have it. It's called The Control of Candy Jones. Mm-hmm. Candy Jones was a model and a pinup girl from World War II. In the 1960s... she was heading a modeling agency because she was too old to model anymore, obviously. And in the mid-70s, she met Long John in the course of something to do with the show, or maybe she was doing advertising on the station, I'm not sure, and they got married. I think they met each other, and they were married like a month later. And, you know, Long John was in his 60s, and she was in her 40s, I think. But in the book... by Donald Bain, Long John started to notice that she was having these strange mood swings, like more than normal for a woman at that time. Mm-hmm. You know, she wasn't pregnant or anything, and she was probably postmenopausal at that point or close to it. But she was, you know, she seemed like she would drop into another personality every once in a while. It was completely different from her, you know, nice, sweet personality that everybody knew her for.
Yeah.
He wanted to find out what the hell this was. And so I'm not sure if she started seeing a psychologist or Long John started putting her in a hypnotic trance. But in the course of these hypnosis sessions, and even a little bit before it, it sounds like a UFO, you know, like an abduction thing. There's like some things remembered, some things conscious, not all of it's there. They seem to uncover a scenario where she had been approached by somebody in the U.S. military and asked if she would like to do some work for the government, and she said okay. And so what it started out was like, you know, delivering – she used to do USO shows in Korea.
Okay.
So she started delivering messages to various places during her USO things. And then it became more sinister. Apparently she was sent to see some sort of psychologist in Oakland. I can't remember the psychologist's name. It's in the article. And he started hypnotizing her and turning her into kind of a sleeper agent where she would take on a completely different personality. She would put on a wig and she would go to these other countries. You know, she would be sent off on these missions to other countries, and apparently she was captured a couple times and tortured before being let go. And, you know, very strange, you know, bizarre kind of stories, you know, yeah. Spy stories. But Jones and Neville and their psychologist all seem to think that this actually happened. It made Neville a lot more interested in, you know, conspiracy, mind control, stuff like that. And that kind of stuff creeped into his show as a subject a lot more in the last two or three years of his when he was on the air because of this episode with his wife. And I said this in the article. He publicly said he wanted to go and kill the psychologist in Oakland there that had made her do all this stuff. And there's been a lot of what I didn't say in the article. There's been a lot of controversy about whether this really happened, whether this psychologist actually existed, etc.
Yeah, has anything really ever since the publication of the book? Has anything really come out about all that? Has it been followed up much, or is it sort of just like one of those lost stories?
If I knew, I've forgotten about it. All I know is there was some controversy as to whether that person ever actually existed and this stuff happened, which makes you wonder where she came up with all this stuff in the first place. Because I think somebody had found that there was that, now that I think of it, that psychologist did exist, and he was in practice in Oakland, and he did have a CIA contract. And the other part of it is there were people at the modeling agency saying that she would go off on trips and wouldn't tell anybody what she was doing and would disappear for days and weeks at a time.
Yeah, so there's some...
And she would never explain it, and since she was the boss, they couldn't really, you know, give her any shit about it because she was the boss.
Yeah.
So there's, you know, there's a little objective evidence that there was something strange going on.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, the king of late night paranormal, you know, talk radio suddenly has this thing thrust right in the middle of his life.
Yeah, it's really strange in that sense, too, because, like, you know, he's already mixed up in the paranormal world, and then this whole weird paranormal element sort of gravitates toward him. It's a synchronicity element. It's just strange. Unless there was something in the whole ether there of her mind control that facilitated that connection.
Maybe so. You know, maybe that's where they attracted each other for reasons they both were not aware of.
Yeah, like I said, we're going to have a link on there on the page. It's definitely a fascinating article, and big thanks to you, of course, for linking to me and mentioning me at the end. I appreciate it.
Well, you do paranormal radio stuff. I do it, you know, kind of as when I can and when I feel like it. And I've got, you know, kind of these heroes of radio, and one of them's Long John Nibble. And the funny thing was I had to mention Gene Shepherd on the same thing because he used to be on the same station. He's another radio hero of mine.
Nice, yeah. And like I said, it's great because not too many people even know the story of Long John Nibble. They kind of think Art Bell started the whole paranormal radio scene, and that's not the case at all. So
I'm sure I've never had a chance to talk to Art Bell off the record or anything like that, but it'd be interesting to find out what he thinks of Nibble, and I'm sure he was aware of him. And if he, you know, it affected the way that he did his shows, because Nibble was very... The illustration I have of him at the top of the post, it said, I put down his trademark phrase was, "I don't buy the gaff."
Yeah.
Which meant he didn't believe anything, almost anything that came on the show. He didn't believe in aliens. He didn't believe in psychic stuff. He thought it was, you know, mostly, if not all, smoke and mirrors. And I don't think Bell is exactly that way. I think he does take stock, or did when he was on the air, take stock, at least some stock, in some of the things that he talked about on his show.
Oh, definitely, yeah, definitely. I think the UFO sighting he had probably had a lot to do with that sort of situation.
Yeah,
as well.
And also I think they're, you know, both of them, Nibble and Bell, were really good at pulling stories out of people and letting people talk and directing the conversation so that it was interesting to the listener, whether they believe the person or not. And that's a good radio person.
Absolutely, definitely. That's how I try to pattern myself. So
exactly.
Hopefully I'm on the right track.
Great job.
Well, thank you.
Well, you let me talk. You let me ramble.
I know. Look at all the good stuff we've got.
Yeah, I'm kind of scared about some of the stuff I've said. Look what you did.
Oh, no. I get, I only have, like, one more big question here, and that's,
sure.
I was talking with Nick. It's been kind of one of my little sort of pet interests in the last 6 months, 8 months, or whatever, and that's sort of these lost stories of the esoteric world, how some stories become huge and then flame out. I'm thinking about, like, the Bermuda Triangle, spontaneous human combustion. These things were huge. And now they're like barely a blip on the esoteric map. Why do you think some of these stories were so big and then they died out and you know, sometimes they make a comeback but barely ever, and it seems like some of these stories have had their 50 minutes of fame and aren't big anymore, especially Bermuda Triangle. Like, that used to be a staple of paranormal world, and now it's like barely mentioned.
Yeah, it's because just what you said, nothing new happens.
Yeah.
People delve into these things as much as they can. If there's nothing new about it that can be dug out of the story, then, you know, that's the end of the story. And the only time something comes back is if there's a new wrinkle or twist, or, you know, what if you know, suddenly a passenger liner disappeared in the Bermuda Triangle. Yeah, it'd be a big story again.
Yeah. So we just have to wait for things to change, come around, that kind of thing.
Yeah, and it's, you know, it's kind of point of view, too. There's been a lot of skeptical things about the Bermuda Triangle, and so, you know, as soon as somebody finds there's some scientist or somebody who says that they're smart saying they've solved something, that kind of kills something too, whether they've solved it or not.
Yeah.
If they do a good PR campaign and say they've solved it, then they've solved it, you see.
Yeah. And then the sort of follow-up question is, like, do you have a favorite story like that that kind of no one talks about anymore, or mystery like that? And what kind of thing do you think has fallen off the radar that you think is cool that people should talk about?
Something that's fallen off the radar that's a story? I'm not so sure if I have a favorite. A subject,
That's what I mean, yeah.
That's fallen off the radar is altered states of mind and the paranormal. Nobody really talks about that too much. Because of the stigma attached to drugs and things like that, people tend to shy away from that. And that's, you know, that's, to me, that's cultural blinders because, you know, 100 years ago, all these psychedelics and all that were being used by different cultures were not illegal because nobody knew to make them illegal yet.
Yeah.
And the stigma attached to it has been just from our culture. The thing I keep wanting to bring up, and Nick brings this up too, is that book, the DMT, the Spirit Molecule, by Rick Strassman.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, there's been other books more recently, yeah, like Pinchbeck and a couple other people. I think Jim DeCorn has written on this too. But there's especially in that book, what's funny is that, well, I have to give you a little bit of background quickly, was that Strassman was given a permission by the DEA to do a study with dimethyltryptamine, which is a very powerful psychedelic drug, mm-hmm. by injecting it into people and then having them lie on a table in a kind of a medical setting and describe what was going on.
Yeah.
It's a very powerful, the thing is it goes in your bloodstream and it's like within probably 10 seconds hits your brain and you're out. You're not in this reality anymore.
Yeah.
But he said that he almost hated to admit it and it really started to bother him that a lot of people, a sizable, you know, amount of the test subject, like 30% of them, were describing things that sounded like alien encounters.
Oh, wow.
That sounded like abductions, without the being dragged out of the bed and taking it somewhere.
Yeah.
I mean, they're immediately there.
Weird.
And they said that there were these entities there looking at them, some of them, you know. And the thing was that not all of them had, you know, there were a few of them looked like they had the big heads and all that. But a lot of them looked like insects, and a lot of them didn't really look like anything. They just looked like, you know, knots of energy or whatever. But they described a lot of the same things that abductees describe while under the influence of this thing. So, what does that tell you?
Interesting, yeah. So you'd like to see more of that discussed and hopefully more research into that kind of thing.
Yeah, you know, a lot, because of the stigma, it's like, well, the person was on drugs.
Yeah.
Like, you know, that's not the, you know, that's a completely Neanderthal attitude to me.
Okay, and what about your interest in the contactee movement? I notice you have a really vivid interest in that. Is that something you'd like to explore more, maybe put out like a book or something like that? Or
I want to put out a book on it, but nobody wants to publish it.
Oh, man.
You know what Nick suggested is that I do a book on flying saucer-themed and alien-themed music, since I've been posting so much of that on the site. But the reason I'm... I don't know. People say, what are you interested in contactees for? Probably the reason I'm interested in it, the main reason is that most ufologists kind of push it to the back or actively despise it.
Yeah.
Well, that makes me very interested. And the reason it makes me interested is because I think at least some of these people were pretty sincere about what they were saying.
Yeah.
I don't know what happened to them. But I think at least a few of them had some sort of experience with something that they couldn't explain, so that, you know, this mold or model was available to them to put their experience into context. And instead of saying, you know, I was taken aboard a craft and examined or whatever, you know, or I just saw something going across the sky or whatever, something affected them to the point where they had to say something. And the model that was available was, you know, friendly people from outer space telling us not to hurt each other or you know, drop bombs on each other and, you know, eat better and all this. Any message to tell people to quit fighting with each other and to treat each other better is fine by me.
Absolutely. Now, do you think what do you think precipitated the change in society? I guess you could say between went from contactees to abductees. You know, with the Betty Von Hill case, kind of changed the whole paradigm. Why do you think that changed so much? Because it seems like quite a drastic change from, you know, people were having contact with extraterrestrials and they were, you know, exchanging messages and stuff, to all of a sudden we were kind of like the cattle and they were just taking people, and it wasn't as back and forth as it had been before.
I'm not sure what changed that. I think that the public exposure of the Betty and Barney Hill thing,
yeah,
that was what changed it. That, you know, the perception of the public mind of whatever aliens are was changed by that event and having that book written about. There, you know, maybe there were, you know, 20, 30, 80,000 other people had the same experience, but the Hills decided to go talk about it and then said it was okay that this guy write a book about it.
Yeah, and then all of a sudden, like, it wasn't so much that the events were changing, but how they were being described was?
Yeah. I mean, I think that, you know, it's well documented the way you look at things and the way you perceive things and the way you expect things is the way that they're going to be. And I think that was kind of it was a cultural shift rather than the aliens have decided to do this now.
Yeah.
Like, we're going to look at this part of it now, so that's what we're going to concentrate on, and that's all we're going to see. And that has dominated the cultural landscape since, when did the book come out, 66? 66, because the abduction happened in 61, I think.
Do you think there'll be a contactee turnaround where we'll see that kind of thing shift back around to the other way, or it'll be kind of, we'll see some kind of amalgamation of the two, or a whole new?
I think we are seeing some kind of amalgamation of the two with some of the exopolitics people.
What do you mean by that?
Michael Sala, for instance, I think he's kind of the proponent of the kind of love and light alien thing.
Yeah.
He's worked that into a philosophy where, you know, if we acknowledge this on a greater level, it could be better for us, you know, in the long run, because it shows us where we should be spiritually and how we should treat each other, etc., which is, you know, that's a contactee message.
Yeah, exactly. All right, yeah, I see what you're saying. The only other question I have is sort of like a follow-up question to our many interviews we've done already, and that's the Bill Moore MUFON speech. Last I heard, I'm going to keep asking you about this till we can get you on the show and play it. Any news on the Bill Moore MUFON speech? I heard last time we had talked, I think that you had talked to someone who had a copy of it, but it hadn't surfaced yet. Any movement on that?
No, I haven't been able to get back in touch with them yet. I think MUFON officially has one, but they're not going to release it.
Oh, man.
You know what? I'm not sure. I think if there is a recording, it's the property of MUFON, so that event was a MUFON event. So I'm not sure if anybody would be allowed to just, you know, start I guess you could do it for free, but they might want to exploit it.
Yeah, well, I'm going to have to contact MUFON and find out what the story is, because I want to hear this thing so bad. That's really all I got.
Well, the first person I talked to said he had a videotape of it.
That's what we really want, because then we can see some, you know, some crazy reactions and stuff.
Yeah, and he's out in the Southwest here somewhere. I see him occasionally, and I've got his number. He said he was going to look for it, and last I talked to him, he said, oh, I couldn't find it where I thought it was. I'll keep looking, which means he'll look for it the next time I bug him.
Yeah.
And I'd be a lot more interested to see a videotape of it, because, well, the thing is, you probably only see Bill Moore talking.
Yeah.
Either. And the thing, you know, Moore wasn't, you know, waving his hands and raving or anything like that. He was very kind of measured throughout the thing. He would, you know, didn't bang on the table or anything like that. But the thing was, you know, he had to keep stopping because people were yelling. And I was sitting in the audience, and it was pretty exciting.
Like, yeah.
Leaving and crying and everything.
Yeah, so that's why the audio would be kind of neat, because then you can maybe hear the people yelling and stuff. It would be kind of cool to hear. Be like, Dylan goes electric.
Yeah. Where'd you get that crap from, Bill?
Yeah. Yeah, that's pretty much it. What's we talked about 2007, we talked about 2008, but we really want to know about 2008 for Greg Bishop. What's coming up for you in the horizon? Anything exciting you have planned? Any speaking engagements? Hopefully you'll be back for the baseball special in a couple months here on BOA Audio. But what else
do you
have?
Most definitely. I already bought my tickets for this next season. 25 games.
Nice, nice. What's going on for you in the upcoming year? Anything big planned?
Well, there's the Roswell thing. You know about Paul Kimball wanting to move Red Star Films out to Hollywood.
I've heard all about it.
Yeah, so he's going to, and I told him I'd help him out with that. So he made, I guess he made me a producer officer or something like that for on Red Star.
Nice.
So he's going to come out here at the end of February and start laying the groundwork for that. And with his legal background, I think it'll be a little bit easier for him. And then sometime in October, he says he's going to be out here permanently. So I want to start working with him to produce the kind of UFO documentaries that I want to see, not the ones where you see, you know, 40 more reports of, you know, of lights flying through the sky and police chasing them, or another person being hypnotized and going through this horrible stuff on camera for everybody to see.
Yeah.
That kind of new ufology stuff that we've been talking about all the way through this show, I want to, and I think Paul does, wants to start presenting things in a different way for, you know, to kind of tell people that there's a lot more ufology than they've been seeing on TV for the last, you know, 20 or 30 years.
Nice, exciting. So you're going to be in the creative elements to the whole thing, which should be fun, right?
Yeah, that's something I'm really looking forward to. And then I'm continuing to, of course, to do UFO Mystic every at least 4 days a week. Between Nick and I, there's something up every day, practically.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then continue to try and sell another book. And at this point, I don't know how well UFO books. It's really hard for me to start writing a book when somebody says, well, we're not going to pay you, and there's no real due date. It's like, well, what motivation is for me to do anything?
Yeah, exactly, yeah. It's hard.
So as soon as I get somebody to say yes on any number of, like, 15 or 20 book proposals I've been sending around, then I'll be doing that. And it may be a UFO book, and it might not. I don't know.
Hey, yeah, do what you want to do, you know, don't get stuck in the UFO realm.
No, well, I really don't want to be stuck in the UFO realm because it's really pigeonholed.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it'd be fun to do a UFO book, but it'd also be fun to do a book on something else. I had a lot of fun doing Weird California, and that was, you know, that was a paranormal type book.
Nice, nice. All right, yeah. Well, hopefully I can weasel my way into some Kimball projects and stuff. Maybe you guys can finally get around to help me make my reality show a reality.
Oh, well, yeah, definitely. Of course. We have to change everything. We have to move forward and change things because it needs to be, as we've talked about for the last couple hours here.
Definitely, definitely, yeah. Well, I'm hoping to someday take over the basic cable paranormal realm with my own show, so hopefully we can get that going someday.
I'm there.
Nice, nice. Well, Greg, I got to thank you so much, and I'm sure the listeners are just going to go bash it when they hear all this awesome material that we've had here on the show. As you said, there's always something new at UFO Mystic. It's an outstanding website. If people aren't reading UFO Mystic, they're missing out on just great pieces day in and day out.
Occasionally, we have guest columns on. Brad Steiger's done a couple. My friend Ken Thomas has done one, and I'm looking to have people do more. Maybe you could do one.
Yeah, I definitely do one. I would be totally down with that. Yeah, definitely.
Okay, write one and send it to me.
Oh, awesome. Yikes, I'm already... Nice. See, that's what we're talking about. You get a deadline on it, and then you can get going on it. But yeah, like I said...
See, by next week, there.
Yeah, like I said, I can't thank you enough for coming on the show. You were one of the first people to be on the show, and back when, you know, we really had to beg and scream and try and get people to come on the show, and you were one of the first people who was just like, yeah, I'll do an interview, sure. So I really appreciate that. You helped us get established and, you know, be a radio.
I might have been first. I'm not sure.
What's that?
I think I might have been the first.
Yeah, well, we had worked out the interview back when I was just scheduling the very first people for season one. So,
yeah.
We were like within the – yeah, I think you were like one of the first five people I ever interviewed. So I really hugely appreciate that and all the great time we've had talking. And your perspective on the UFO field is awesome. We need more people like you who don't have a dog in the fight, if you will. You aren't married to one side or the other and willing to change things and look at it from a different perspective. So I appreciate that. And
way to go with the UFO stuff.
Absolutely, you got to. And we'll be talking again in a couple months here for the baseball special, so I guess we'll just wrap it up at that, and thanks again for coming on the show.
Well, thanks so much for having me on, Tim. It's one of the most fun interview formats I'm on for any show, because people get to say whatever they want.
Nice, exactly.
Or say things like bat shit.
That does it for this week's edition of BOA Audio Season 3. Big, big, super huge thanks to Greg Bishop for coming back on the show and giving us so much time. You can find out more information on Greg Bishop at the following websites, www.ufomystic.com and www.excludedmiddle.com. Don't forget to check out his internet esoteric show, Radio Mysterioso, which can be heard on Sundays from 8 to 10 p.m. Pacific Time at www.killradio.org. So there you go. Check out those sites. Check out Greg's podcast show, Radio Mysterioso, and get to know Greg Bishop. Before we dive into BOA audio listener feedback, let me give you a couple teasers on stuff that's coming up on the horizon from Banal of America. For starters, we got a little something called BOA Audio After Hours. This is going to be featuring some of the folks you've heard about here in the close of the program. I've gotten tons of emails over the years from people that want to hear from the BOA staff, and I want to give them a little special treatment, so we're going to have something called BOA Audio After Hours, sort of a little bite-sized mini-interviews, something that'll be at the end of the programs and as a standalone sort of spin-off series. I'm looking at getting BOA Audio After Hours up and running hopefully by the end of February, and you'll be able to hear from some of these great folks that I've been thanking week in and week out at the end of the program. Also, we've got another big project that I'm working on, BOA DC. There's not too much I can say about that, except that we'll be breaking new ground. It'll be a whole new sort of medium for BOA, and we're going to be potentially reaching a massive audience of folks who probably haven't heard of BOA just yet, but they're going to hear about it via BOA DC. I can't say too much more about that because I'm hard at work sort of wrapping up the final details of it, but I expect that BOA DC will also hit the streets around the end of this month. So you got a couple of big things to look forward to: BOA Audio After Hours and BOA DC, two big projects from Banal of America that we've been working on here as 2008 began that we expect to see blossom, hopefully, by the end of February, beginning of March. So stay tuned for those. Now we move along to BOA Audio listener feedback. We got a huge stack of letters here that have accumulated over the hiatus, so let's just dive into this week's letter. It comes from Joe. No hometown listed, just Joe. And here's what he has to say. Mr. B, I enjoy your site, especially your archive of MP3s. I enjoyed my first download tonight. It was Jim Mars, and I have read his book Alien Agenda. It is the best one so far. I would like to recommend a good interview for you in the future. The man's name is Art Greenfield, and he is the author of Warning. This book is pretty good. I don't know if you've read it, but it is really scary. I'm in one of Art's Yahoo ET groups, and he is very articulate and sharp. He says that reptilian aliens come here every so often and collect dead human bodies and stock up their motherships with them, that they instigate wars and disease here on Earth. Interesting stuff, huh? Yeah. Anyway, thanks for the access to the MP3s. They are great. Yours truly, Joe. Well, there you go. Thank you very much for writing in, Joe. I appreciate your feedback and your props on the archive of MP3s. Don't forget, folks, those MP3s are there at banalofamerica.com. Tons of episodes, probably over 70 at this point, so definitely worth checking them out. Thank you so much for the guest suggestion, Joe. This Art Greenfield sounds like quite a character. I'm going to have to look into his book, Warning, and I'm definitely going to see about possibly having him on the show. The reptilian alien story is one we haven't really even scratched the surface on here on the program, but it's one that I find fascinating and frightening, and whether it's true or not, definitely interesting and worthy of exploration. So I'll definitely check out Art's book, and if I dig it, we'll have him on the program at some point in the future, provided, of course, I can get a hold of him and we can get the schedules worked out and all that good stuff. Thanks again for writing in, Joe. Stay tuned, and I hope you dig the new episodes here we're rolling out for 2008. If you would like to be a part of BOA Audio listener feedback, here's the two ways to go about doing it. Either A, write to boaaudio@hotmail.com, or simply go to banalofamerica.com, click the contact button on the left-hand side of the screen. That'll put you on the contact page with all the pertinent information on getting in touch with me. Either one of those methods will put your correspondence in the ever-growing pile of BOA Audio listener feedback letters to be read and responded to on a future edition of BOA Audio. Up next, of course, is the thanks. I gotta give extra special thanks this week here for the great BOA staff, Leslie, Chiron, Arlie, Jovi, Tina Senna, and our newest member, Rochelle Hawks. During the hiatus, the vast majority of the stuff at the website was courtesy of the outstanding BOA staff. They carried Banal of America throughout January, much as they did throughout the summer when the audio series was off the air. I can't thank them enough. They are the heart and soul of this website. They are the fuel that makes the machine run. And as I said, they carried the website on their back throughout January. So I can't give them enough props for all their help and support with the website and the audio series. If you haven't checked out the columns at banalofamerica.com, you're seriously missing out. These are some top-notch reading material and great insight on a wide variety of esoteric topics. As we like to say here on the program, week in and week out, if you're just listening to BOA Audio and you're not reading the columns at banalofamerica.com, you're only getting half the story. Check out BOA, check out the columns, and find out why so many people are making banalofamerica.com a part of their everyday search for esoteric news and opinion. I know what you're saying right now. You're saying, Tim, I love the show and I want to help out, but how can I do that? Here's the answer, my friend. There's two ways to help us out. The first method is pretty simple. You go to banalofamerica.com, click the PayPal button, and make a donation via PayPal. No donation is too small, and all donations go towards helping keep BOA Audio and Banal of America up and running and freely available to all of our great listeners the world over. The other method is also pretty simple. You go to the website, you click the merchandise button, you'll see it. It's flashing with the cool BOA line of merchandise. Click that, buy some merchandise. We get some money back from that, from the Cafe Press folks, and that money goes into the till for BOA. We only got one little thing left to do here, and that's, of course, preview next week's program. Next week on the show, we're going to delve into the ghost genre for the very first time here on BOA Audio with our guest Larry Flaxman, founder of the Arkansas Paranormal and Anomalous Studies Team, known as RPAST. We're going to be discussing the ins, the outs, the creation, the evolution, and the research methods of the RPAST group. We're going to get Larry's critical thoughts on some of the staples of ghost hunting, like EMF meters, EVPs, and orbs. His thoughts, trust me, folks, are going to really surprise some of you what he has to say about some of these big pillars of the ghost hunting community. It's a tremendously enlightening take. Plus, we're going to have a ton of big picture discussion on the ghost hunting field, its explosion in popularity, and the pluses and minuses of the rapid growth of that esoteric genre. It's definitely a new area of coverage for BOA Audio, but we managed to retain our same flavor for in-depth esoteric discussion. That's next week. Larry Flaxman, founder and president of the Arkansas Paranormal and Anomalous Studies Team. Tremendous stuff. Very good interview. I'm looking forward to hearing the feedback on this one. We've had many people request sort of us getting into the ghost realm, so we're finally going to do it here next week on the program. Stay tuned to BOA for a little more in-depth preview of that, and of course teasers for future episodes of the program. We're going to be doing a few more ghost episodes in this cycle, and in the not-too-distant future, a major, major international ufology episode with a guest who will be giving his first ever American interview on BOA Audio. We're going to establish a beachhead on a whole new continent that we've never even touched on here on the program before, but we're going to do it in a couple of weeks here on the show. Stay tuned to the program and the website for information on that. Of course, as I said, next week, Larry Flaxman of RPAST talking about ghost research. And on that note, we're going to wrap it up so I can finish up putting the episode here together and get it online for you and hopefully break our streak here of late episodes being posted. I'm very excited to be back, and I'm looking forward to hearing your thoughts on these episodes of BOA Audio that we've taped in January. Thank you so much, folks, for listening. Thank you so much for being patient with us and waiting for the return of the program. Thank you for your tremendous support and loyalty. This program would be nothing without our great listeners. Trust me, I know that, and I appreciate you all from the bottom of my heart. Until you hear from me next week, this is Tim Banal, thanking you for listening and signing off.